Welcome back to the Man Cave Caucus Podcast, episode 67, baby. What do you think, Tim? We've made it this far.
Yeah.
How many days are we from Christmas?
Well, today is
18, 17.
Oh, my.
Not enough.
I am not prepared. I know
that. We're not enough days.
I am not prepared, I will say
pretty
that.
Pretty paper.
Oh.
And for this week.
Ribbons blue.
I feel like I'm not far from selling pretty paper.
To your darling.
And pencils. On a street corner.
Hang in there, Tim.
It's going to get better.
It's going to get better.
I love you.
About to get moved into your house, hey?
Pretty. Yeah. It's pretty amazing
how
the distance a dollar goes these days, just they snap before they start stretching even.
This is so true. Thanks a lot, Joe Biden.
Pretty paper.
Downtown.
But it's going to get better.
It's kind of what
I've got good news for you guys.
The dollar is pretty paper is all it is.
There he sits.
It's beautiful.
All alone on the sidewalk.
Pretty crypto is...
Hoping that you won't pass him by.
Oh, Willie. Is he still?
Should you stop?
He's still kicking.
He's still kicking.
Better not.
He's 203 years old. Joel, don't Google that on me. Now.
Well preserved.
My time.
He sings with his boys a lot now.
Huh.
He has, I believe, Luke Wills. No.
The ringing of laughter. And in the midst of
anyways,
the laughter.
But yeah, he's had quite a wild life. He was stabbed in the
pretty
fork
paper,
by an ex-wife.
Pretty ribbons.
Stabbed what? By a fork?
She stabbed him with a fork.
Wrap your present.
Been through the mill, man.
He,
just look at him.
Been homeless.
Lucas.
Was abandoned by his parents. Lucas.
Pretty pencil.
Lucas.
Some people call him Luke Wilson.
I love you.
Yeah. He refused to file for bankruptcy. I thought he did. The IRS told him he owed $32
million.
They seized all of his gold albums. Pretty much took everything but his guitar.
And he just hung in there.
Just kept going. He released Stardust that year.
It's what you got to do.
And then made his Christmas album.
So we hope you're having a good Christmas holiday. We're not going to go into the next Willie Nelson song.
Yeah, we ended up on a whole playlist there.
But hey, we're back. Back for another episode of the Man Cave Caucus Podcast, where you can get your news, your entertainment, and... hey, probably some random commentary from Tim if you stick around long enough. So I'm your host, Ben Baker. Tim Holden is the co-host, sidekick extraordinaire. Detective Joel Mace is always at the ready over there with fire in his fingertips as our full-time, part-time search engine expert.
If people knew that I never stopped talking, you just muted me every now and again to get a word in edgewise, they'd have a whole new appreciation for the production.
Yeah, this is why you have to come to see a live production, a live recording at some point. It's definitely an experience. We've had a few.
I'm in a drummer's
cage. Nobody's ever came back twice.
I'm in a drummer's cage behind a plexiglass wall. And, my mic just goes off every now and again.
It happens. It has been a heavy week of news and so much to talk about. I don't think it's possible we can get to it all. Also back from Washington, D.C., visiting the swamp this week. So there's that. A lot to discuss with that as well. It was quite a trip. So the American Legislative Exchange Council is a policy organization that I'm a part of, actually the state chair for Missouri, and they have a meeting every year in the winter, usually in Washington, D.C. I think it's every other year they have it in D.C. And so with that, there was a lot of stuff. We had one night we went to Capitol Hill, had a dinner there with Speaker Mike Johnson and Also got to meet Winsome Sears, the lady that is the current lieutenant governor of the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Really awesome lady, and as I understand it now, running for governor, I believe, in Virginia. So that was fun. Got to hang out with Congressman Burleson, of course, quite a bit. Even got to be a guest on the Fresh Freedom podcast.
No way.
From the Capitol. So that was a lot of fun. Tim Jones was on there with me, another state legislator, Bob Titus, and then Congressman Burleson. So that was a lot of fun. Also, we had our state night. So the Missouri, kind of the Missouri group that went, we had about 40 people, over 40 people, I think. Senator Eric Schmidt showed up to that, got to listen to him for a bit and hang out. Congresswoman Ann Wagner was also there. But one of the things to me I just wanted to mention was the overall kind of tenor right now in Washington, D.C., after Trump winning the election. Not really surprising to us, but it was interesting to kind of get the feel for that actually in D.C. And talk to, you know, various people, some people that have worked on the Hill for a long time, other people looking on from the outside, others in conservative Republican organizations that are going to be heavily involved in the Trump administration. And I thought it was interesting. The swamp, as you might imagine, the bureaucracy, the entrenched, you know, people that have been there for so long in the machine that is Washington, D.C., and, of course, the legacy media are all losing their minds. I mean, they literally think it's the end.
The end.
It's the end.
It is. That's
the end. It is, yes.
Hey, if I wonder if you could get all of the non-entrenched folks in D.C., like in the House and Senate, to everybody show up one day in hip waders.
Yeah.
It would be stinking amazing.
What do they call those? Flash mob?
Yeah. Don't tell anybody.
Right.
Don't tell anybody. Just, you know who you are, like, you know, contact directly all the people who are not swampies.
Just show up one
day. Be like, hey, bring the hip waders.
Maybe that's the first day.
If you don't get an invite to wear the hip waders,
then
your days are numbered.
Right.
The party's almost
over. If you weren't invited, that tells the story. That's a good idea,
Tim.
It'd
be hilarious.
I'll put that out there.
Yeah.
But so, you know, they're losing their minds. But with the normal people, you know, they're people that not only supported Trump, of course, but also people that just care about our country, swing voters, for instance, people that care about the economy, people that care about their business, you know, I mean, on down the line, family values, you know, whatever it might be, those people, there's a sense of enthusiasm and optimism, actually, in the air about the future. And it was really kind of remarkable to me. I had multiple conversations with people who are actively involved with the Trump transition team, even. And there's an overall theme. The overall theme with this incoming administration with Donald Trump is cutting or eliminating bloated government in an unprecedented way. That's like the overall theme. And with that, sending more power back to the states, right? Because that's what you do. If you cut the federal government, you're sending more
power
back
to
the states.
So to speak.
Yeah. It's a novel idea, isn't it? So that's kind of the overall theme, but there's also a lot of talk about extending and making making permanent the Trump tax cuts that will expire if not extended. So the Trump tax cuts are going to expire in 2025 if they're not extended by Congress. That was the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and there's provisions of that for it to expire. So that's significant changes to our income tax rates and the standard deduction rates and other related tax benefits for just individuals when you file your taxes, to the tune of $3 to $3.5 trillion if those Trump tax cuts are not extended. $3 to $3.5 trillion that will be taken from the taxpayers if it doesn't get extended. So that's probably one of the priority talking points right now for the Trump administration, is working Congress, working everybody that has to be involved to get those extended. And with the thin majority that we have in both chambers now, that's a tough, it's a tough thing to accomplish. I think it will get done, because you can't argue with the success that they have had, right? And that's the thing that I think matters to a lot of people. So that's some of the conversations I had with people. I didn't get to really see a lot in D.C. at all. It was just in meetings and all of that the whole time. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you can see it here behind me.
Yes, but I was going to ask you what that was. It replaced the...
old TJ.
Bust over here, yeah.
Thomas Jefferson bust. So they gave me the Legislator of the Year Award for Alec, which was a huge honor. And
that's beautiful.
Was able to accept that one night. They have a...
Who presented it?
The Alec CEO and the chairman, I believe, is who presents those.
Let me see if I can guess the acronym. Is Alec an acronym?
It is.
Okay, I can't read that far, but I'm going to guess the acronym. Okay. Association of Legislative Excellence.
I see Joel's fingertips moving with fury.
I knew what it was because I saw a post earlier in the week. But
Society. Oh, that's an S. Never mind. Okay, I give up.
So it's the American Legislative Exchange Council. Oh, it's the largest organization membership of legislators in the country.
Wow.
And they're just about free markets, federalism.
Good things, good ideas.
Conservative ideas.
Good policy.
Yeah, good policy. And have been for many years.
That's so awesome, Ben. Congratulations.
Good group. Yeah, it was
beautiful.
It was really humbling. I felt like there were a lot of people who deserved it more than I did. But I sat next to, at the table that night, I sat next to Indiana Senator Jim Buck, which has been a senator for, I don't know, 30 years probably. And then Mike Braun, which is current congressman, but he is, senator, I believe, in Indiana. But he is going to be the governor of Indiana.
Did he ask you why you left?
So we had some good conversations, yeah. Well, when I accepted the award, one of the things I said was, it never ceases to amaze me how, you know, an old boy from the sticks of nowhere in Indiana could grow up and somehow end up being in the state house. And so because of that, we had some good conversations
That's
about
awesome.
Indiana. But the other thing is, when they gave the award, they announced me as senator. So,
well,
the first thing,
a little foreshadowing,
the first
Lord
thing,
willing,
right?
I mean,
the first thing I did was say, well, I do appreciate the promotion, but I'm just a, just a lowly state representative.
This has happened to you a couple times.
This is a recurring theme.
Yeah. I was hoping I was
Lieutenant Governor.
Naomi did remind me of that, but
yeah. So just tell me this before we move on.
Yeah.
Did you go to Christian school?
I did. 12 years.
Did you ever receive a pastor's award?
Like good behavior?
Well, we had an award
like
called
Christian Character Award, or
pretty much. It was the biggest trophy on the stack.
I don't think
but
I
they
ever
called
did,
it
Tim.
The pastor's award. And I remember there was one year our school, we had a church split, and our school got so small. I was like, I think this is my year.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Now, I was never under any
it was never going
the
to be
pastor's favorite. I really did think that year this could be the year, because there was only like 13 of us left.
Mm-hmm. The odds were getting better.
They were getting way better.
Yeah,
they went up by almost 60%, 75%, I guess. And anyways, I was just wondering, receiving that probably felt like receiving a pastor's award, which I never felt that feeling,
like
but
I
just wondered,
it.
Were you just, when they called your name, were you like, looking for the other Ben Baker for a second.
Right. Could it be true? Yeah.
It was surreal. Pretty surreal.
It was surreal. Great honor. So
beautiful little bust.
Yeah, getting that home was a little challenge to carry around this cardboard box.
Oh my goodness.
With TJ in there just toting
along.
They
tried taking that from you.
I thought about putting him in the seat next to me on the airplane and just buckling him in.
Yeah. Did you have an empty by you?
Putting a neck pillow on him. Yeah, dude. I did have coming home, yeah. I had an empty seat.
Is that not the best feeling?
Oh, man.
I got wonderful. 3 seats to myself one day, got settled in, right? Mm-hmm. And then somebody who didn't have 3 seats...
Wanted to sit there.
...was like, hey, do you mind if I...
There you go.
...take the aisle? Like, sure.
It would have been better if I didn't have 2 screaming kids sitting right behind me on the way home, but
at least it wasn't a cat. Right? You ever had a?
Have you seen that? I don't know. This is really random, but have you seen that video of the woman breastfeeding the cat on the airplane?
I have not. I don't feel
it's
like
a real thing.
I feel like that's why I have
the guy's
parental,
throwing a fit.
He's parental
just like,
blocks.
She is not. This is not a baby. And finally, they pull the blanket off, and it's just a cat.
Are you serious?
I'm serious, man.
People have... That is toxoplasmosis.
That's something.
Alive in
it's
your brain.
Seriously something, bro.
Are you familiar with...
Something wrong.
The toxoplasmosis?
Mm-mm.
So that's what makes a cat lady a cat lady.
Okay.
Is that what pregnant people... Is that why pregnant people aren't supposed
pregnant,
to be around cats?
Pregnant women are not supposed to be around cats because of the feces.
Yeah.
The bacteria toxoplasmosis, if a rat gets that, it is actually attracted to the scent of a cat.
What?
No joke. Well, humans get it.
Oh, my.
And that's what makes you a cat lady.
An addictive cat lady.
It is. You're addicted to cats from a bacteria that a cat carries.
Joel, are you Googling this?
I've Googled it. I certainly don't see anything that Tim said.
It's real. Joel,
look at this chart.
You may have to get off of Google. You may have to go into the black webs.
Is this in the dark web?
All right.
No, this is
we're learning.
This is not wacky stuff.
This
here.
Is definitely a not
a real
a,
thing.
Not a rabbit trail, but a rat trail we've taken.
Yeah, so
it
for
does
real.
Explain some things if
yeah,
it's true.
It's true. Trust me. Okay. I wouldn't double down on it.
Yeah.
I've heard Rogan talk about this a couple times. I've never heard of that being the cause of being a cat lady. I think that's...
Oh, yeah. No, they're riddled with toxoplasmosis, and it seems normal.
All right. I'll take your word for it, Tim. If Joel finds that out...
Toxoplasmosis is a real thing.
Okay. So it is real.
Oh, it's 100% real.
It's
150%
real.
I just
don't know if it makes... Cat ladies be cat ladies.
I think it's possible. It
yeah,
sounds
you start
very...
out with one. Handling their poop once can get you toxoplasmosis, and rats will actually be drawn to a cat. That's proven. 1 + 1 = 2. And if rats who without
right.
toxoplasmosis
who they always use to test these things.
Well, and without toxoplasmosis are innately terrified of cats.
Right.
If when they get it, they're drawn to cats,
there's
it only makes
to
sense.
It.
I think that's a 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah. All right, kids, we're learning today on the Man Cave Caucus. So
makes sense.
Next up, Joe Biden pardons his son, Hunter Biden. And not just a pardon, Tim, but for a blanket period of time between January the 1st, 2014, and December the 1st, 2024. That's what? Almost 11 years?
Almost.
A blanket pardon. So here's Joe talking about pardoning Hunter Biden.
Your son Hunter is on trial, and I know that you cannot speak about an ongoing federal prosecution.
Look at his
but
face.
Let me ask you, will you accept the jury's outcome, their verdict, no matter what it is?
Yes.
And have you ruled out a pardon for your son?
Yes.
Your son Hunter is on trial, and I know that you cannot
speak. So there's
speak
Joe
about-
Biden saying he ruled out a pardon. earlier this year. And then we have just
not
a little.
The first time Joe's changed his mind.
No.
I was going to point out.
Or didn't remember.
I'm old enough to remember Uncle Boosie.
Uncle Bosey.
Bosey, the one that got eaten by cannibals.
Uncle Bosey.
But it's going to come as a shock to our audience, but this is not the first lie
that is
that Joe's told.
Is he going to posthumously pardon Uncle Bosey?
He's going to put him in the Ring of Honor or something.
Well, so, if he was real, he would.
And then here's KJP, the White House press secretary. Also,
what a class
just
act.
Really denouncing any thought of
what a class act
Biden pardoning Hunter.
Second one, would the president pardon or commute his son if he's convicted?
So I've answered this question before. It was asked of me not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, and I was very clear and I said no.
Okay. Hey, let me go back to the first question of the briefing. I know you said not a lot's changed since yesterday, and it's a personal matter. But from a presidential perspective, is there any possibility that the president would end up pardoning his son?
No.
Again, you've also said several times that the president would not pardon or commute the sentences for his son, Hunter. I just want to make sure that is not going to change over the next 6 months. The president's saying he would not.
It's still a no. It's still a no.
It will always be a no.
It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. And I don't have anything else to add. Will he pardon his son? No.
No, of course not.
What? Where's the last video?
There was. I haven't seen one yet.
She has to have run for the hills at this point.
I haven't seen one yet.
I did some biased Googling.
Yeah.
And some researchers speculate that parasite toxoplasmosis gondii may be a biological factor in compulsive hoarding of cats.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no direct evidence
mm-hmm.
that it causes this behavior in humans.
Was that testing done in a Wuhan lab?
Possibly. But toxoplasmosis can cause obsessive compulsive disorder, which they have linked that. Mm-hmm. Would you not say that is obsessively compulsively collecting cats? So I think the writing is there.
That's a good on the wall. You need to do a white paper on that, Tim.
I will.
Yeah.
In my free time.
Yeah.
All that free time you got.
I will say this. I'm really upset that I didn't place a small wager on the pardon for Hunter Biden on Polymarket.
You know, I was just fixing to say, had we been watching Polymarket, we would have.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Because they denounced it many times, obviously.
Our class act press secretary probably
KJP
had all the money
in Polymarket
on him definitely pardoning him.
Right.
And how would you signal?
Would that be insider trading?
How it is. No, it's worse than that. It's Pete Rose in it. Rest in peace.
So I thought that was interesting. There is talk by the Biden administration of several preemptive blanket pardons. Have you heard this? So pardoning Fauci, Adam Schiff.
Can you pardon
Liz Cheney?
Can you pardon
Mark Milley
for things that
they haven't done
they
yet?
Have not been convicted of?
Well, they're talking about
it. Blanket.
Yeah, they're telling me.
Or even charged with.
I'm looking at this, and they are telling me that the presidential pardon could be a preemption for something somebody has not been convicted of yet.
They may call it the...
It's unprecedented.
Or even charged with.
Or even charged with. Nobody's done this yet, I don't think. I don't think anybody, any president in history has done a preemptive pardon.
It's called the Linus pardon.
But they're talking about it. And why is that? Why is it that they're so worried about Fauci, Liz Cheney, Adam Schiff, Mark Milley, and these people?
Has he pardoned himself yet, or is that going to be a couple more weeks?
I don't know. Is there a Polymarket odds on that one?
I'm looking at Polymarket, and I don't see that there.
I don't bet, but I might put $5 on that.
So, yeah.
What stick out to you guys that... he went back like 10 years and some odd months, almost 11 years
mm-hmm.
on
for Hunter
down to the day
2014,
it's like right before he started at Burisma,
mm-hmm.
right before he sent him to China to pick up all that cash.
That's just a coincidence, Joel. I'm sure of it. I'm sure it is. I mean, it's just a arbitrary date, right?
Yeah.
Let's just go with 11 years.
11 years, 8 months, that ought to cover 3 it. Days. That'll cover do. It.
Okay, we got to move on. Also this week, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. After the, we talked about this a little bit last week, after the threats of the tariffs for Canada and Mexico, he scuttled right down there to talk business with Trump. And so there's been some interesting memes out of that, I will say, of Trudeau being there.
All of the world leaders right now are terrified.
Yeah. So Trump reportedly told Justin Trudeau that if his tariffs destroyed Canada and the country could not survive, which is what Justin Trudeau was saying, without ripping off the United States to the tune of $100 billion a year, then Canada should just become the United States' 51st state, and then Trudeau could serve as its governor. Is that not just boss level?
I feel like that was generous.
Just boss level. We're so back, guys. I mean, did you see Trump just shake hands with those guys this week? Macron and those guys? It's just boss level. Like, you could tell people, these world leaders were looking at Trump like, well, there's a leader in power again.
There's an adult in the room.
Yeah. It was just actually delicious to watch. Did you see the picture of Trump and Jill Biden in the background where she's just giving this loving look toward Donald Trump?
I have not.
There's been a lot of memes. Pull that one up, Joel.
Okay.
There's been a lot of memes on that one as well. But and then some really funny AI. They've got one AI where they're just looking at each other, and then all of a sudden they start scrapping. Just going at it, going to fists. Oh, it's funny stuff. But, yeah. So, meanwhile, though, Joe Biden is in Africa promising the farm, basically, to the African nations, apparently $1 billion in aid to Africa for natural disasters and things like that. But here's a clip from Biden while he's speaking in Africa. Here's what he said.
I joked with you earlier when I said we Bidens are like poor relatives. We show up when we're invited. Stay longer than we should, eat all your food, and don't know when to go home.
He really said that.
Wow.
Sitting at a table with leaders in Africa, he said, we just show up uninvited, we eat all your food, and we don't know when to go home. I mean.
Wow.
You know, why wouldn't you, I guess, if you're Joe Biden at this point?
Just tell the truth.
Yeah. But here he is talking about $1 billion in handouts to African natural disasters. Think about this. Meanwhile, they have abandoned the hurricane victims in North Carolina. It's unbelievable what's going on with FEMA in that situation. You have Haiti that's, what, 1,800 miles from the U.S., border of U.S. That's an absolute humanitarian crisis. Disaster, and there has been, I haven't heard a single peep out of this administration regarding Haiti, but yet he's in Africa talking about handing out $1 billion to African nations. Mm. So that's Biden this week. I think just Biden is time.
Biden tracker?
If you know what I mean. Just Biden is time. Next up, this week, South Korea experienced a significant political upheaval. I don't know if you've been following this at all, but the president there, Yoon Suk-yeol, I think is how you say that, declared martial law on Tuesday, December the 3rd. This declaration was the first of its kind since 1980 in this country and was aimed at his political opponents, whom he labeled as, I quote, shameless pro-North Korean anti-state forces. So this announcement of the president of South Korea, of course, led to immediate opposition, protests, and defiance from both the public and the members of the parliament as well. They even had, we have videos of this, armed troops attempting to storm the National Assembly building where Parliament meets in Seoul, South Korea, with soldiers breaking windows using helicopters to access the compound. Of course, this was met with resistance from the parliamentary staff and lawmakers. They literally were barricading the doors with furniture and using fire extinguishers to deter these soldiers trying to break into Parliament. Despite these efforts, around 300 troops managed to enter the Parliament grounds. However, the Parliament convened with an emergency session, I guess you could say, literally, an emergency session. But 190 members were present at that meeting. I think there's 300 total. So you had, looks like you had a quorum. But they voted unanimously to reject the president's martial law declaration. So following the Parliament's vote, then President Yoon announced that he was going to lift the martial law. This would have been Wednesday, December the 4th. After only about 6 hours of it being in effect, then it was lifted. But that was, you know, of course, something that led to calls for Yoon's resignation or impeachment, and even some moving to file treason charges against him. So, and even some of his own party, I believe, some of his own party members had opposed his actions, and it's caused some international concern with people monitoring this situation, other governments around the world, given, you know, we have a military presence in South Korea. So, you know, it definitely would affect us in the U.S., but I mean, I don't put any faith in Joe Biden to make the right decisions at this point. I'll tell you what, one thing, January can't come soon enough. That inauguration where the change of power is finalized cannot come soon enough for the U.S.
We're a mere, what, 20? It's not January 5th.
No, it's like
the end, like January
22nd or something like that.
The inauguration?
Yeah.
The 20th.
Is it the 20th? So, yeah, that's happening this week. Then another huge news story this week was what happened with the assassination, is what it looks like, of the United Healthcare CEO. Did you guys see any of this? This is crazy stuff. Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare, which is, I think, the largest healthcare company, insurance company in the world, right, was fatally shot December the 4th outside the Hilton Hotel in Midtown Manhattan just before 7 a.m. He was on his way to an investor conference where he was ambushed from behind by a masked gunman who had been lying in wait, apparently. Surveillance footage captured the event, showing the gunman firing multiple shots, including, he also, did you watch the footage of this?
Mm-mm.
He had a jam in his gun, which he was very efficient at being able to clear. I thought it was unique, actually. I thought it was probably only a tier one operator or somebody who definitely knew what they were doing. And just watching him clear that gun jam. But anyway, that was just something that I thought was interesting when I was watching it. But then he fled the scene on foot into an alley, and then later, I think, an e-bike into Central Park, but got away nevertheless, at least to this point. I think they're finding out who he is now from the latest news that I had read today. But it was interesting. At the crime scene, they found these bullet casings, and he had inscribed these words on the bullets: deny, depose, and delay on the bullet casings, which, you know, is kind of that reminiscent of the language that insurance companies use when they claim, you know, they deny claims that are made to the company. And that, you know, of course, is a, I'm sure, figuring into the investigation. I'm sure Joel could chime in on this, but it seems as though that would point to a motive. However, you know, I wouldn't put this past a frame job as well, you know, making it look like it was something like that. I do think this guy's under investigation by the DOJ. Is that correct? You want to look that up, Joel? seemed like he was
Brian Thompson.
Yeah, was under investigation by the DOJ. I'm not sure for what. I can't remember, but so they recovered some other items: a backpack, a cell phone, a water bottle. All of those potentially containing DNA evidence, but they do have some video evidence showing his movements prior to the shooting. That he arrived in New York 10 days earlier from a bus from Atlanta, staying at a hotel, using a fake ID, all these things. But, you know, of course, the primary suspicion from people investigating this is that, speculating that the motive might be linked to dissatisfaction with the insurance industry's practices. The CEO, Thompson's wife, mentioned that he had received threats, possibly related to issues with coverage denials. And then, of course, the inscriptions on the bullet casings fuel that theory. Investigators are also looking into whether he was targeted due to personal conflicts or, you know, his role as an insurance executive, considering the messages left, you know, might be intended to mislead or confirm a broader satisfaction with the industry. So we really just don't know at this point. No arrests, I don't think, have been made yet. So federal agencies, I'm sure, are working on this. But
I would... I was kind of pondering this, and I feel like that there's definitely the laugh emojis are completely uncalled for.
Yeah.
But I absolutely, if it was your son dying of like cancer and refused coverage,
your claims being denied,
I could definitely see a husband, a father, you know, doing this. And it's doesn't make it right, but it is definitely vigilante. The odd thing is, I feel like that the gunman would have surrendered with motives like that.
If it was the actual gunman who had the motives.
If
I don't think
if
it was.
If the gunman had the motives, like if it was a father,
right.
You know, a whatever.
I think he was hired.
I feel like if you had that motive, you would surrender.
Yeah.
Be like, I did it. This is why. That is kind of odd.
No, I think this guy was a professional.
A hitman.
From what I can tell.
Apparently the gun he used was an assassin's gun. Did you see that?
22 mag? Well, was it 22 mag?
It was the... I don't know.
It was a small caliber, I know.
And you had to like... It was like
bolt
a single
action?
Single shot, the, like bolt action,
yeah.
Pistol.
It had a suppressor.
They called
on
it.
As well.
They called it an assassin's gun.
Yeah,
I don't know anything more than that. I did find that according to Fox Business, multiple senior executives at United Healthcare have been under investigation by the DOJ. Though it is not clear if Brian Thompson was part of that investigation before his murder.
Okay, so there was a kind of a blanket investigation.
That's Googling right there.
Yeah, thanks, Joel.
What I do.
I like that.
So yeah, that. That's a big deal this week, and we'll see. I wonder if Polymarket has any odds on whether this guy will be caught or not. I'd say will be.
They think just by facial recognition they'll get him.
I,
but it's kind of odd.
But who was behind it? You know,
if you get him, you might have a chance of figuring that out.
Do the old waterboard, maybe.
Did they release a name on this guy?
On the assassin?
I thought they had.
Oh, I didn't know if they
had. I read all sorts of stuff, though.
Yeah. I knew they were saying they were getting close to figuring out who it was. But, I mean, with the picture that I saw online of that video footage, it looked like you should be able to positively identify him. But you never know. If he's a professional assassin, there could be some challenges to that.
Some layers.
Yep. Also... This week, the Supreme Court heard arguments regarding Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for transgender minors. If you guys were following that or not.
That minor, like coal miner?
No.
Oh.
No. No, as in aged him.
There's a lot of miners in Virginia, so yeah. That was...
This case specifically focusing on puberty blockers and hormone therapy as surgical interventions for minors are not primarily at issue, but here is a summary of some of those arguments that were heard at the Supreme Court this week. So, you know, the ones that are filing suit challenging the ban, they're the proponents of transgender care argue that gender-affirming treatments, you know, like puberty blockers, hormone therapy, are medically necessary and supported by, you know, the major medical associations, which I went around and around with people over this. Not all of those people agree, and they try to make the case that these treatments can significantly reduce stress, depression, you know, suicidal ideation among transgender youth. But the arguments supporting the ban, you know, Tennessee is the state bringing this forward, and the supporters of the ban argue that there is a there's significant medical debate regarding the long-term effects of these treatments on minors, pointing to some of the European countries that have really walked that back when they received some data showing that they should. Also, insufficient evidence to see to say that this the efficacy of these treatments are what they say it is. They argue that the state has a compelling interest in protecting minors from irreversible decisions when scientific consensus is not clear. The state also contends that decisions about medical care for minors, especially when there's medical uncertainty, should be left to the legislature rather than the judiciary. So they argue that the law is not about sex discrimination, which is what the proponents claim, but about regulating specific medical practices. Because of the potential for regret and potential for harm for a lifetime. So this is what is before the Supreme Court this week. And the outcome of this case could set a precedent for how similar laws in, I think, 23 other states have passed some kind of a ban on this, what they call transgender care. Missouri's one of those. And it could also influence future legal interpretations of discrimination when it comes to the Equal Protection Clause. So this is a big deal. They heard the oral arguments this week. I think the decision won't be until the spring session for the Supreme Court. But here is an interesting clip of, no surprises here, but the one of the lawyers that is on the side of the proponents trying to overturn the ban is a trans-identifying lawyer who is really worried that the Supreme Court should uphold the ban in Tennessee. And here's her words, I should say, regarding that.
Pro bono?
I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt it.
I think this person's name is Chase Strangio.
Well, that's... Is it really?
Yeah.
That's fitting. What a strange year.
I want to bring in the lawyer who's going to argue this high-profile case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Chase Strangio. Chase, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it. So the case comes at a time when 26 states have passed laws restricting healthcare treatments for transgender youth, according to a CNN analysis of data from the nonprofit think tank Movement Advancement Project. So how do you plan to argue before the U.S. Supreme Court in a case that could have wide-ranging implications beyond the state of Tennessee?
Well, thank you for having me, Jake. And obviously, this is a critical inflection point for transgender people across the country. We're coming off of an election season where transgender people played an outside role in people's consciousness in terms of the way in which we were situated as a threat to others. And when we look at the map of states that ban this type of evidence-based healthcare, we went from zero states that had these bans in 2020 to now more than half the country. So before the court tomorrow, the question is really a simple one as I see it. It's really, this is a law that bans medical
looks
treatment
like a direct
only when it is prescribed inconsistent with an individual.
Enrique Iglesias and Ricky Martin
because of their sex and
mustache,
therefore the court has to treat
5 o'clock
it like all
shadow.
Other forms of sex discrimination, and that's why it's unconstitutional.
So attorneys representing the state
Ricky
of
Martin.
Tennessee told the U.S. Supreme Court, quote, if the government's theory holds, men who identify as women could claim.
Here's what I don't understand. Like they, you know, they try to change their voice usually. This one has apparently not
did so much work on the outside.
So.
Didn't want to.
Yeah.
But
I'm not going to play the rest of it. But that's one of the lawyers arguing the case. So you could imagine that.
It's near and dear.
Right. Definitely a personal stake in the issue, I believe. You know, so this happened while I was in D.C. In fact, some of the lawmakers that I'm friends with went over to the rally that was going on at the Supreme Court because they were also there for Alec. Matt Walsh spoke at the rally as well. You know, he was one of the ones at the forefront of this, bringing this to light in Tennessee. And I think a very big part of why this is at the Supreme Court today. But one of the inquiries during the oral arguments that I thought was just great was from Clarence Thomas, as you might imagine. A man of few words,
as we
if
know.
You recall. But when he speaks, he knows what he's talking about. So here's the question that he sprung on the ACLU lawyer, which I think was strange to you. He said, "What remedy are you seeking?" And Strangio, which was flummoxed by such a seemingly simple question, said an injunction. And Justice Thomas then asked, practically, you would get different treatment based on sex. And because of that, of course, the trap was laid, right? So the plaintiff, a girl who identifies as a boy, would be allowed to get drugs for a typical male puberty despite having a birth sex of female. And that answer made clear that girls who identify as boys would get a right under the Constitution to testosterone, but boys who identify as boys would not, which is discrimination based on sex.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a pretty genius argument from the Honorable Clarence Thomas. But that's what this is. It's discrimination on many levels.
Got him.
Got him. Yeah. But so we'll see how that turns out. For most people that I talk to, I think that the Supreme Court is probably going to rule on upholding the ban in Tennessee, which I think will be, which I think is, of course, the right decision to make based on the law. But also will have an effect on a lot of things. So, and of course, the other side of this issue, the LGBTQ folks, they kind of protested by, well, having a dance in the bathrooms at Capitol Hill.
I've had a lot of dances on the way to the bathroom.
And also to protest the situation with Congresswoman Nancy Mace fighting to prohibit, you know, the creepy men that want to appropriate as women in the women's restrooms. And so here's the activist that held the dance party in the women's bathroom on Capitol Hill the other day. And I was actually at the Capitol when this was going on the other day.
Were you in this bathroom?
I was not in this bathroom.
As rumor has it, Nancy Mace was in the third stall just trying to handle her business. These folks are just dancing around.
I can only imagine. They're pretty proud of their little protest. I don't know how. I don't know. They've got that place so tightened up now, you can't even get in the bathroom.
Tight as a drum.
Yeah. Here it goes.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live knew what they were doing. They would have a Nancy Mace lookalike in the third stall, yes, just screaming and banging on the wall.
That one lady that just came out, she looked like she didn't belong.
She probably got caught in a flash mob.
Yeah. That's enough. But yeah, so that was going on in the restroom at Capitol Hill.
That there was a flash mob that could put you on a predator list.
Well, no, I don't think so, Tim, because their shirts said trans people aren't dangerous, you are.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah. Well, That's definitely their mantra, isn't it? So that was going on. So many things. Also this week was a big story, the Assad regime in Syria. I don't know if you read about this, but has basically faced challenges leading to its apparent collapse. This was on December 7th. Syrian rebels, led by groups like the HTS, which is another terrorist group, is the way I understand it. I don't even know how you say it. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, launched a swift offensive across Syria, capturing key cities like Aleppo, Homs. Ultimately, they, I think, captured Damascus, which marked the end of Bashar al-Assad's 24-year rule there. He fled the country, reportedly to Moscow, where he was granted asylum by Russia. Celebrations erupted in Damascus as the rebels announced Assad's departure. They announced it on state television. They also freed prisoners from some of the notorious regime jails. And, of course, there's mixed reactions to this because it is a terrorist group with the opposition that now are in power. Some countries welcome that, the UK, of course, and Germany welcome the news. But Israel was much more cautious with their statement, the US as well. You know, there's concerns about the stability of this region, the potential for chaos, the protection of all the things in their state institutions, and the fate of Assad's chemical weapons stockpile. Now being in the hands of, you know, terrorists. So, but I think it's interesting to point out that the fall of Assad's regime largely, I think, is attributed to Russia being so preoccupied in Ukraine, because Russia supposedly were the ones protecting Assad in his regime. But they're obviously very occupied with what's going on in Ukraine. And then also, if you look at the economic collapse in Syria, also a big miscalculation by Assad, and I think led to his vulnerability. So this is changing the landscape in the Middle East. Probably, you know, some people think it's a good thing. Some people think it's a bad thing. You know, ultimately, now it's a regime change, but is it any better in the hands of a terrorist group? I don't think so.
Polymarket's got a prop up right now that says, will Israel invade Syria in 2024? It's currently has an 87% chance of yes.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is, things are worse than I thought.
Yeah. I probably need to buy into that one, because I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I don't think Israel's into amassing more territory for themselves. But
apparently,
now, if it becomes a matter of you know, national security for Israel, then that's a different story. So it could be. Because, I mean, that group is definitely anti-Israel.
Yeah.
But
well,
time's going
to
tell.
If they use all of Syria's assets to start waging war on Israel, they'll have to do something.
George Bush
definitely, they'll have to respond.
Definitely would go in and do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Regardless.
Speaking of warmongers, Donald Trump released a tweet that basically says the last two sentences are, let it play out, do not get involved.
Yeah, which is the right position to take for the U.S. You've got both of those people are enemies, right? So, I mean, why should we get involved? Let them fight it out, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, though. And with that, don't forget, you can find us on all the platforms where you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, all of the above. And when do you find us? Please leave a review. Leave us a good 5-star review. That would really help us out on the show. And then just most of all, share this with your friends, your family, people that you talk to throughout the week if you enjoy the podcast. And we will catch you next week. God bless.
Ah!